The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome to the Code Breakers. This is D, and we should have Paradox. Oh, okay, there go Paradox. And thank you for joining us today. Today's date is October the 12th, 2016. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday's
11th.
Oh, the 11th. Okay, my fault. October the 11th. I'm trying to skip a day ahead. My bad. Thanks for joining the Code Breakers as we further discuss racism, how to decode racism, and the effects that it has on the African American community, so-called Black community. And you want to go ahead and introduce the topic today, Paradox?
Yeah, the topic today is going to be on an interesting question, which is how to become a Black person. You know, obviously, are you born Black? Obviously, you know, we would say yes. But just a discussion to kind of get into the details of what it means to be a Black person, something that will be an ongoing conversation, especially for me, as well as discussing the African-American Museum a little bit. We're going to just touch on the documentary, The 13th, about the 13th Amendment, as well as the film Birth of a Nation, and we probably have time to touch on some politics as well.
Politics.
So one thing in our description we're going to say is, well, we will discuss the requirements of becoming a Black person at the local and global level, also observation and critiques of the museum, opinions about the film, The 13th, and national politics as well, and its implications for non-white people. So that's the topic. Did we get a chance to get T on the line, or I don't know if he's on or not, but anyway.
Still checking in with him, but as soon as he joins, if he does join, right, we'll make sure to get him queued up.
Yeah. No problem.
Yeah, so we can go ahead and get it kick-started. So, do you have a, and I guess we could just go ahead and jump on right on
well,
in.
I'll hit it with one question that I ask myself.
Yeah.
You know, just to keep it direct, this is a question for you. Do you consider the President of the United States, Barack Obama, a Black person, and why?
Man, you're trying to put me on the spot.
So you can walk the history on it, but I just want to start it there because, you know, we did put him up there as the first African American or the first Black person as president. We, from a Codebreakers perspective, we are trying to minimize confusion. So I know that statement might come off as confused. But I think that you should question everything. And that's an old thought that I've always had very, very early on when studying philosophy, is to question everything. So the things that are the most obvious that you should accept, like being a Christian in America, you don't question those things, right?
Right.
So that's why, to kind of ease it a little bit, that's why I use him as an example of, is he what you would consider the prototypical black person, which is...
Prototypical? No.
Okay, so we is say he, no, okay. Is so, it, so, is, so. The defini- is the definition of black a cultural phenomenon? Is it an identifier that's been given to us by other blacks, by whites? Or do you need to go step by step historically to get us to the word black? Because when I say black, I mean African American, nigger, nigga, negro, colored, whatever the words that have been out there over the years to make people feel whatever they feel, or to use as a classification to separate. Does black include all people of color? So indigenous people to this land, is a Cherokee, would they be classified as a black person based off of skin color and phenotype? Would a person from the Igbo group or the what is it called, the Chicana? Am I saying that right? Chicana, or with someone from India that has darker hue and darker melanin, has a lot of melanin in their skin, would they be considered a black person? Is a black person identified from a third world perspective based on how white supremacy has been structured, first world, second world, third world, and meaning that the poorest people would be classified as black or the most vulnerable people? How do you identify what's the most vulnerable? You know, you do have a lot of slavery. What I consider slavery, obviously here, but as well as in places like India and Pakistan, multiple millions of people who are in some form of bondage. Would they be considered that? Would white people fall in that classification based off of certain rules or not? Right? You have one drop. We did some research recently, right? We're looking at about maybe 5 to 7 million so-called white people by Virginia and Mississippi and other laws. Historically, they wouldn't be able to be white, if I'm not mistaken. I could be off on that a little bit, but that's a big number.
That's a big number.
So, you know, just different questions. If I help lay that out a little bit, just a discussion. Yeah. People can obviously call in.
Yeah, you want to give out the number and.
I don't have it up in front of me. My computer's been acting a little crazy.
Let me get that queued in before we even get started here. I'd like to give out the number and make sure that whoever can call in, call in.
They can call.
Go ahead. You want to give it out?
Yeah, 1-641-715-3660. That's extension 549-032. Pounds. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on the air. You can obviously tweet us at codebreakers191. So go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to need some help on this discussion. So anybody that calls in that want to share their thoughts on the classification, and if they know a better way of classifying people,
might not be that difficult.
Please share. but my whole thought pattern on the classification of black is really, really simple. If you have a parent that is classified under the classification of black, what does that mean? Someone that falls under the classification of black is someone that has been deemed by white people in particular, and by identification, a person that is of African descent, of lineage, that you can actually see it identifiable on them. And no matter how so-called Europeanized this particular person of color may be that is classified as an African American, we're talking about all the way up to, say, like the Mariah Carey's of the world that has two black parents, which there are people that look like her that got two black parents. Same thing with Vanessa Williams, the Jesse Williams of the world, you know, the Kaepernick, so on and so on. Barack Obama falls out because clearly he's someone of a darker tone than they are, being that his father is from Kenya and his mother is from Kansas. So her genetics got annihilated on sight. So he looks like Uncle Obama more so than someone that we would consider in this particular part of the world or the country biracial. He just looks like anybody else that has a light-skinned family member. So he kind of falls out of this category, but it still stands because he do have a white parent, which is very, very important to acknowledge, especially when you're dealing with confused victims of racism, white supremacy. Let me just please quantify, this is not a scientific classification, but President Obama would be black by law also. He fall under that clause, clearly. So do I consider him a black person? That is a highly affirmative yes. Now, there are some people that have African ancestry where they will be in a lower 10 to 15 percentile, I would say, you know, kind of like in that vein, where it would be hard for me to kind of tell people that's in the DMV area or people that are in some social consciousness communities. If you ever heard of Rock Newman, if you ever seen Rock Newman up close, you know, he looks like a tanned white man. But he would clearly tell you, what would Rock Newman tell us if he was online right now, if we asked him what was his classification, what would he say?
He's a black man.
So you got that going on. I mean, clearly he has children that are black, but Rock, Mr. Newman would clearly would fight tooth and nail. You know, and if you look at his parents, it even gets more confusing because, you know, he has his whole family looks pretty much like, you know, regular white folks. But you know, that's just kind of like to kind of give you an illustration of how confusing that term black could be. And I guess as we get further along into it, we can kind of go into the history. But just to kind of give a quick synopsis in 2016 terms off site, there is that's my classification synopsis real quick, like to identify someone that falls under the category of black, and this don't have anything to do with genetics. It's a classification that's forced upon people, in my opinion, and I'll get into detail about that a little bit later. So, what is your synopsis on the whole term black?
No, I'm totally confused by it. Honestly, I mean, you know, the more I try to get an understanding, the murkier it gets. One thing I'm clear on is that the white man, the European, has made it clear they, from my understanding, do the classifying. They categorize, you know, people and everything else, and they make the determination, from my understanding. You know, that's why we want people to call in. Maybe we can get a different light to shine on it, but you know, and that's the reason why I say it's confusing, is because is there other things that's also driving the acceptance of it? So if someone is if we're going to claim and say that someone is forcing the classification, we have evidence of it based off of, I guess, census and other things, forms and things that you fill out in this system to determine, even at your birth. I think the president's, that was born in 1950, I think does his say Negro on it or black on his birth certificate? I can't remember right now, but I mean, your certificates tell you what you are within the system. I think it gets interesting when I think when maybe people start to try to maybe use other words. And so I am curious about getting into that a little bit more too, as far as what you tell yourself. You know, so why would we tell ourselves that, no, I'm not really a black person, I'm a person of color, or, you know, I don't care what anyone says, I'm really brown. You may hear words like that. And it is a curious thing, just because, you know, I don't you know, there's no rules, I think, from a day-to-day cultural sense, right? I can walk around and tell people I'm anything. The question to you
except
is
white.
when does it be, you can say
white.
That too. You can say
well,
that too.
You can say that, but I think that would get checked a lot quicker than anything else that you.
I just think that the question really comes down to, because the reason why I say that is that it's a power thing. So me and you can call each other anything, nicknames and that's what we go by.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels real, and I assume it is real to a degree, and it has a, you know, I think it has a certain form of power within our group. You know, me and say 10 friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
I go by this, you call me this, et cetera, et cetera. The question I have for you is that when does it become a real thing? Like, how does it become a I want the world to know what I am? You know, like how you know, what is the process, or does it even matter? You know, like, you know, do you proclaim these titles?
Well, you have.
Or is it insignificant? Possibly?
You have all kinds of different people that fall under this so-called classification of black people. You have people that's in Southeast Asia that look like us. If you want to classify that as looking like us, but they have a very curly hair texture, you know, darker skin tone, the kind of brownish to dark skin tone in the Philippines. And I mean, they call them the Negrotes. Have you heard of that term?
Yeah.
Negrotes?
Yeah.
So you have like an indigenous population of people, you know, that's already there with native populations that look distinctly different than they do. But, you know, you got people in Malaysia, Philippines, wasn't it Indonesia, the South Asian Pacific, you know, landmass, where you got people that look very similar to someone that would be in sub-Saharan Africa. You know, so that's where this term kind of gets lost, because, see, at the end of the day, when this term was in this, it doesn't have to be just black. It can be colored, Negro, Afro-American, African-American, whatever you want to kind of term it. It's something that hasn't. Can it be?
Yeah. Native
I think
America.
It's been designated. I think that's been designated towards another group that's distinctively, that looks distinctively different than, say, so-called people that have the so-called features that I'm talking about.
Fellas, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, sort of.
I can hear you.
You can't hear me?
Mr. Reed?
I'm sorry.
I can hear you.
Okay. I pulled up his birth certificate, and we don't have any calls, and because our other system is down, I'll just let you know when you have some calls. So the callers do need to hit *6 and 1. So I can let them know, you know, that you would like to speak. But as the founder of the Black Talk Radio Network and the Black Talk Media Project, I think it would be appropriate for me to weigh in on this conversation. Don't you think so?
Yes, sir.
But going back, I'm glad he mentioned Barack Obama's birth certificate. What is he classified as? I went to the White House website and downloaded the PDF file of his birth certificate that he provided, and he doesn't have a racial classification.
Mm.
It doesn't have that box for his birth. But this is what's interesting. It doesn't even use racial classifications for, listen, this is what his father was classified as, Barack Hussein Obama, race of father, African. So is African a race now? I thought it was a continent.
It's not a race. That's what I'm saying.
So that's what's on his birth certificate. Now, for his mother, Stanley, that's her last name, I guess, Stanley Ann Dunham. Well, maybe her first name is Stanley. But Stanley Ann Dunham, Caucasian. Now, that's a racial classification that I've heard people use, but I have never seen that on, I can't recall on a, it's been so long since I filled out a job application, I don't even know, or filled out any government forms that ask that. So, I mean, mm-hmm. the question is relative to who's doing the classifying and the reason why, it is my opinion on that. When you look at the history, they were called at one time Negroes. It's in the census. I'm talking about records or how mm-hmm. people, or you can look at the abolitionist records will give you a peer into how people, a window view into how people were classifying themselves, because they were publishing papers and you know, they're real prominent, so you get their personal effects and you get a gist of how they classified as themselves. And so when they were classifying everybody, the government was classifying you either as a Negro or a mulatto, which is a mixed race person of any mix, white, black, African, indigenous, any mixture of that, you're a mulatto. Any three-way involving two of those three, you're a mulatto. Or you were, let me see, back during that time, people were all, I mean, not during that time, but going back farther, people were known by their nationalities. So again, we have all these different labels, different terms that are classifying people for different reasons. And classification is not just under the system of racism or by the practice by the United States, but they practice it in Africa as well, in different nations, as they identify among black people, or let's call them Africans, because they on the continent, meaning they're on the continent of Africa, but belong to different nations. But then they break themselves down into classifications like tribes and what have mm-hmm. you. So there's mm-hmm. something more to this classification, that it is not just being practiced by white people or a system of racism. And now getting to why did I name this Black Talk Radio, or call it Black Talk Media Project, because these were popularly used terms that when I was being used when I was born, because that was during the Black Power movement, also when Barack Obama was born. Mm-hmm. Black people stopped mm-hmm. calling themselves Negro and said, hey, I'm calling myself Black, and Black is beautiful, and Black Power, and all that. So, but even if you go to ancient African cultures like Kemet, it means land of the Black. Blacks. So you have people in Africa referring to themselves by skin tone as well, to describe themselves or each other. I was shocked to find this out 2 weeks ago. I was doing some research on something else, and Stevie Biko, I'm pronouncing his name correctly, the South African organizer.
Yep. Steve Biko. Yeah, that's
Steve
right.
Steve Biko. The organization that he founded was the Black Consciousness. I forget the rest of it. But Black was mm-hmm. the first word in the name of the organization he founded. So he in South Africa. And so I was like, that's interesting. That's the first time, you know, and it got me to think about this very conversation y'all having. And so then I started looking at other people during that period, activist writings and whatnot. And what it meant in the 60s was Black was to identify the oppressed people of African descent, no matter where they were on the planet. It was meant, they started using it as a unifying term, but all throughout history, like Moor, people say I'm a Moor. Well, Moor is Latin for Black, and yeah, Latin or Greek thing. For Black.
So yeah, I think it means something different, but the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I actually looked that up too. I did a video on it. That's what it was, a European name, what the Romans came up with. I don't know if it was the Germans or whoever, but it was white people, Europeans, we'll call mm-hmm. them Europeans, who started calling them Moors. And they were highly recruited into the Roman army because of their fighting ability, which it's even to this day, man. But yeah, the reason I call it Black as just a unifier, like flag, I'm throwing up the Black flag. So this is a safe Black space for all oppressed Black people. So we, you know, but I never put that much deep thought into it, going into it, because, I mean, these were terms that people were already using that I was born into. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and we're trying to just get down to the deeper side of it, on the reason why it became a term to used to classify all these different groups of people that have different bloodlines, different ideas, different mentalities, different cultures even, that all these people are basically blacks.
One
but
last
we,
thing.
We still fall under the whole guise of being oppressed by, you know, the group of people that classify themselves as white, though. So
one
that's
last
the
thing on the
thread.
Birth certificate. But that's interesting that, I mean, race of father, African. I mean, you sound like some ignorant folks who would put that down. So, you know what I'm saying? But
no, it looks like it was meant to cause some confusion.
Some confusion. I don't know. But why don't they have a box for him? So for the child, it had one for sex. Where's the one for race? That's it.
I got one on mine.
Do it. What does it say? It don't say it on the one
black.
I got from the White House.
Yeah, it says black. Yeah, absolutely.
Do it. Man, what am I missing? I must not have my glasses on.
My great grandparents, they got a couple of different names out there. Mulatto and some other stuff. So
in my family, it's not black too.
It's like Negro. I saw like
it's Negro and some. Like they changed it off. I think in the '50s or forties, they changed it from Negro to black.
I think it depended on what state you was in too.
Now,
see, that's
just
that's
one last thing. One last thing, and I'm gonna be quiet and sit back and listen. But this is a very interesting topic, but I just found this out recently with the birth of my grandchildren. So apparently they letting the mother choose the race of the child. Because they asked my daughter how she wanted, both my daughters, how they wanted to put down for race on their birth certificate.
Huh.
The question is, do they have a list to select from?
I'll go ask her. I'll go ask her.
If they choose white, what would they do? I wonder what somebody... I bet you
there's somebody that's
done that.
They'll put white down.
So you go to the DMV, and you are a person that is heavily melanated, and you can just check off the white box, and you think that they would give us a driver's license and passport and all that.
Absolutely.
They won't do that. You know they won't do that, man. Especially here. That ain't happening.
I don't do absolutes I do is white supremacy, but outside of that anything is possible.
And white supremacy says that you will be identified immediately as a person that is not white.
Well, it's still like you said. At the end of the day, it's going to come down to treatment, regardless of what you put down on a piece of paper. Once you're interviewed and they come in contact with the test curve itself. The reason why you got me thinking about the situation where they're talking about hiring practices in Silicon Valley, and the one guy was saying that the lady offered an option to make the workplace more diverse, which is we would do interviews, but we would do them with no visual, right? So it'll be all recorded, all done in rooms, but you won't ever actually see the person. And the owner of one of the companies was like, hell no. Like, he instantly was like, no. I have to see who I'm dealing with. It was interesting looking at, you know, that part of it. He had some other reasons from a visual perspective, but it didn't really matter, right? I want a coder. Mm-hmm. This is nobody going into sales or any particular field where you're pressing flesh, having to interact with people. These are people who are going to be sitting in a queue and clicking away, basically, right?
Yeah.
And I just thought it was interesting. I said, well, that would make things more interesting, but not to get too sidetracked off the topic. But so we would say that let me just go down this list here. So we would just say that.
And let y'all know you do have a caller, 614-614. Do you want me to open the mic? I don't know if that's the other person.
Yeah, I think that's T.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be T.
Hello?
Not there. You still open it up. Greetings, okay. greetings.
Hello, how you doing today?
What's going on, sir? How you doing? You joining in on the topic? You hear us trying to get this whole thing about classification down on who's black and who's not? You going to get us together on it?
Yeah, well, no, I have, I called in earlier with questions regarding to that, I think Brother Scott there remembers. You got me looking at my birth certificate right now. Seriously, there's already a mistake. They have I'm a male, obviously, but they have an F where the sex is. So when you got to thinking about classification, I don't really think it matters. I look at the certificate as a bond, and to them, it's a bond. But when, like you said, when they see you in the face, because I used to work in telemarketing, they want to see that face. You know, they want to see the face. But I kind of agree with the brother Scott. I think he said to where black really should, because see, once you start getting into ancestries, and there's so many things that are not known. I mean, if everybody just went to ancestry.com and got their results, and yeah, we could come to the table and talk about, okay, who's who specifically. But if you don't know that, then you just have to go with what's obviously there, which is your pigment. And yeah, I think it really should just be black people, descendants of slaves born in America. And then, I mean, from a reparation standpoint, and then after that, let the chips fall where they may, because trying to classify and get everybody's direct descent from thousands and thousands, I mean, with the, you know, slavery, incest, it's confusing. It's confusing.
Absolutely. Now, do you agree with the sentiment that black is a forced classification? And let me just kind of, reason why I say that is because just about what you just said, you kind of reiterated that, you know, to try to go back into the history of your genealogy is almost next to impossible, to get down to the exact tribe or whatever your bloodline is going to be, the majority of whatever
Let me finish
my question. So do you feel like, because I hear this term a lot, you have a lot of black people now, right, where mm-hmm. I would hear this term used, especially for people that are what they would classify as biracial now. They'll say this. Now, as far as I know, there's always been black people that had a white parent since we landed on these shores, or since the first European came to these shores and mixed in with whoever they mixed with that had our kind of pigmentation or darker pigmentation people. And right. Whatever the baby came out of that, these people were still classified with those folks. The women that had the kids, they were slaves. They, whether they worked in the house, whether they worked in the field, they still had the same so-called experience. You know, there was variations. There are levels to this, but right. For the most part, those people were still put together. You know, you have families where there was like very, very light-skinned so-called black people, and then there was very, very dark-skinned black people. So of course this whole interaction is not nothing new. So, but now we get people that will say, well, we need to go ahead and, you know, kick the our waffle colored brothers and sisters to the curb, because, you know, these people are the ones that are, you know, causing confusion, and we need to stick to the ones that are like, to, I heard somebody actually say it, from medium brown all the way to the darkest pigment of us. So they want to start the classification. You know how the paper bag test works, so they want to do it the opposite. So if you ain't darker than the paper bag, you ain't black. Yeah. So they want to work from that level on out, and they want to just start to exclude our lighter skinned brothers and sisters, regardless of if you're related, regardless if you're in, you know, whoever. So they want to kind of start to exclude and say, well, these people are black, and that's what we should do. So they want to kind of reclassify the race. So do you think that that is something that is viable, or you think that is just something that's not very, very logical at this point, since we had relatives that clearly were you know, bred by the slave master or people that were lighter skinned that got with each other just over an amount of time. And then you have like the Beyoncés and the Creoles and Louisiana and, you know, in the VA area where we have like some of them here on the Gold Coast and, you know, the People's Family, lighter skinned people. You know what I'm saying? So.
I'm from the home of Huey P. Newton, Monroe, Louisiana. As we all know, he was very fair skinned, and I think I heard him say that it was just a result of the slave master having his way with our ancestors, and that's how I look at it. So I don't look at the light skin thing as being anything. I mean, we would lose so many of our leaders if we excluded or used the paper bag set. But I will say this. The Latinos or the Hispanics, they did it, but they did it as a group and as a nation. And I don't think that we can change our identity or change our name as a people until we unite as a people. I think if we united as a people, we would, it could be real easy. We could stand as one and say, hey, we are this.
Hey, we have another caller. I didn't mean to interrupt. Our other communication system is down, so I have to let the host know when we have a caller. So we got a caller from the area code 240. I'll bring them in whenever you guys signal. But here's a classification that I recently adopted for myself. I'm an Afro-Carolinian.
Afro-Carolinian. Afro-Carolinian.
I like that. That's a tongue twister, but I can get used to it.
It's logical. It's logical. I got you.
Yeah, the first term black, we weren't given an option, like the brother said earlier. We weren't given an option. So just based on the options that we were given, we kind of took whatever was given to us. So, like I said, the Hispanics, they went from Hispanic to white in a matter of, you know, paperwork and process. So,
well, we're going to flesh out the Hispanic thing a little later, because that has a lot of dynamics to it. I'm not going to, we'll be on that for the next couple hours. I don't even want to mess with that now.
I think the black Hispanic community call themselves Afro Latino. So. There's a separation.
And then you got white Hispanics, and it gets interesting.
The black people that speak Spanish.
Right. You got Afro Brazilians, Afro Cubans, Afro Caribbeans, Afro Mexicans. You got white Hispanics. I mean, you got a lot going on.
Yeah.
In that group.
So there's already a mixing pot. I'm from Louisiana. That's like the gumbo of ethnic groups. So I'm confused. So, and my name is Carlito. So,
Lord have mercy.
and I can use that to my advantage. You know, it gets me the interview, but, once I show up, it's a different thing.
Should I bring the caller in?
I have family in New Orleans, too, and it's very interesting because I was telling Paradox that, you know, you have a whole group of black people. People that's classified, I mean, blacker than black people that are very, very fair skinned. Straight, damn near straight bone hair. They look black. Well, you can identify them as black, you know, but they all look like Alicia Keys, Beyonce, you know, they're very, very light skinned, but everybody in the family is like the same skin tone. And, you know, what I was telling them, I said, you know, you have families that had a strict code, you know, hey, don't date nobody that's darker than you. You make sure you keep us as light as possible. Now, they wanted to be black folks, but they wanted to keep it as light as possible. Now, you know, as far as I know, you know, it looks like Beyonce's mother broke the code a little bit, even though she still has light-skinned children. But if you look at Solange's son, even though she has she had the son with a darker-skinned male, her son looks like Jesse Williams. If you ever seen her little dude, you know, he got like the light eyes and that's just that Louisiana stuff. I mean, I don't mean to cause confusion, but I'm just saying he looks like he has a white parent. He has a white parent is what I'm saying.
The reason why I think it's important you have to have these conversations is, well, number one, if you want to mess with reparations and they start trying to identify who gets money, well, that's something different to talk about. But you know, a lot of folks become black real quick. But I think from a hatred perspective, self-hate possibly, or not even self-hate, but other groups impacting our group based off of that, especially white people using the colors to cause infighting. And honestly, because we have issues with skin based off white supremacy, I think that in the future, if anything happened to this nation, you know, how would we treat each other if whiteness got a little weaker and we had to start to do our own thing, you know, how would it impact the group? Now, we've seen a little evidence of this back in Africa, how some groups were pitted together once the Europeans had taken over and left, and you had a lot of infighting. And I'm not saying it was based off of color, but I do know that they did whatever they had to do to create a lot of confusion, and it caused a lot of killing. And in this country, and the reason I'm making a point about that is that I could see, I'm not just seeing from a social media perspective. I don't have any raw numbers or evidence on a larger scale, but just looking at a little bit of social media stuff, it seems like people have reactions to skin color, have reactions if a black person maybe talks to someone outside of its race. And so there is something there. I don't think it's a small thing. I think it's a very, very, I think skin color is a very, very significant thing. And to pretend that it's not one of the most important things to me is kind of strange, I think, especially when I think historically we have a very clear understanding, I think, that it's been used in a certain way. And psychologically and deep down within us, I don't know what's buried down there. You know, when you see this image versus this image, how do you respond to it? Does it cause division? You know, or am I just making this up? You know, do people actually have an issue? I've heard people say stuff like, if you're a black person coming out of a white womb, I mean, what are you? Or you may be some mulatto, or you this other group called what they use is the word, I hate that word mulatto, but they use that word to say that you're a different group. Mm-hmm. You got people who look like the person that they're talking about and saying they're a different group. Now, this is a very, very anecdotal statement I'm making, obviously. It's not really a big statement, but just talking to people here and there, it seems like color is an issue. But as soon as we start talking about color, then it's not an issue no more. Oh, what are you talking about? We're all the same people. That's not true.
Paradox,
we have people.
We do have a call. They've been hanging on for like 10 minutes. I don't know if y'all forgot.
Okay, they can jump in. You can bring them on.
I think that's T. T, is that you?
Hey, what's up, bros?
What's going on, man? How you doing, man? You can. I know you've been listening in. I guess, you know, Paradox, do you want to go ahead and continue what you were saying? And then, T, you could jump in and kind of give your thoughts on the whole term black and everything, and we can kind of go from there. But I know you some thoughts on it.
You know, so, and I do want to also add in, from an indigenous perspective, how does that look as well? You know, is it a separation between the indigenous people in this country who look similar to people around the world, really, as far as skin tone, some phenotypes, etc. How do you deal with that group, especially if in, like, I think we had the one guy on the line said he was from Louisiana, you're dealing with Oklahoma and other places where you had a high percentage of mixture with African and indigenous people. And again, this is just for people who obviously believe that the transatlantic slave trade existed, by the way. If you don't believe that, then clearly you don't need to be listening. But as far as the indigenous people to this land and what mixture, and how did that create any more confusion? Or either we adopted into their group, or into their current culture, that's the ones that are still around, or did they come into our culture? And also, the question for both of y'all, I guess, just to move the conversation along, is being black outside of the classification a cultural thing as well? So identifying with
treatment, identifying with environment, culture, environment, food, music, contribution, etc. Does that play a role as well into saying, well, can anyone be black? Now, I'm going to separate the word for just a second from white supremacy, from whiteness, and just say black as a cultural word. Can you still include everybody on the planet that has dark skin, that has similar phenotypes? Can you include all of these groups from a cultural perspective, or would you have to say, well, we can all work together, we can all come together, we can all at some point have something to unify us and say, well, even though we do things this way, we all have the same enemy. So we can come together under that, but understanding that if we ever defeat the enemy, that, you know, you have to do your thing, we're going to do our thing, we can divvy up things or whatever. Just getting some understanding even around that. Not to go too far out there, but I am curious about that as well, because even within this nation, people identify with their area. And so you have people who identify with not only their neighborhood and their street, and that's at a very, very low level. They also identify with their region and just different cultural things like go-go music from a music standpoint, or the type of food you eat, where you may be a seafood heavy eating group versus more of a soul food heavy group versus more of a Creole, et cetera, et cetera. So just those little nuances that make us just a little different, but certain things that unify us. Obviously, we know that being under white supremacy is one of the major unifiers, but there's also some things that we brought from what we now call Africa as well, as far as culture and tradition and belief systems, and just how we can, I'm not trying to create division, I'm just trying to understand what this is. I like to have more clarity around it, is why I'm saying it that way. But you can go ahead, T, if you want.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's definitely, and I apologize, some of that later on the discussion, but there's a lot being said there in a very brief time. A lot of good stuff. I think part of what should be looked at is, if you look back, well, I guess we should start with what is the definition of white in current day, right? So we know, like, the Census Bureau has, I think, up to like 40 or 50 different designations for race. And so if you look at white, they'll break it out and say, well, they'll put in parentheses, white, not Hispanic or Latino. And it basically says a person having origins in any of the original people of Europe, the Middle East, or North Africa. So, I mean, and I've actually been in a situation where I actually put white on an application just to see what would happen. And, you know, I got a kind of funny look, but, you know, the process still went through as normal. So, I mean, because potentially, I mean, if they were to come back and say something, they might be looking at potential lawsuit or something like that. Not to say that they would necessarily get anywhere, but you could always say, well, you know, I'm from North Africa, or whatever the case may be. Or what if you're a black person, be classified as black based on your phenotype, and you're born in Europe? Say you're a military brat, you know, you're born in Germany or something like that. Does that make you a white person based on that definition? So I think those are things that need to be asked. But again, that's just the modern day definition of that word. And in fact, going back to, I believe, 1970s or 80s, for the listeners that live in Maryland, if you look at your license, there's no race classification on your license. Most other states within the union, you're going to see a race classification. It might say, it might have a W or some type of B or something like that to designate your race. And so in the 70s, that was actually removed. I think 70s and 80s, it was actually removed from the license in Maryland, because you had, you know, regardless how you feel about it, but it was some Morris brothers who actually challenged the state on that and were actually able to successfully removed that classification from the license. So that's why that's not there. Just a little bit of history, for whatever that is worth. Even if you go back further, you look at like the Naturalization Act of, you know, most of the stuff is codified, so that's kind of why I'm referencing law in this particular regard. And I don't know if, I apologize if this stuff was, you know.
No. Go ahead. Get into it. The law aspect of it.
Sure, sir. So if you go back to the Naturalization Act of 1790, which is, I believe that's the first Naturalization Act that the newly founded the United States acted, the Constitution of 1787. I believe that's the first actual Naturalization Act. And basically, what it provided for, they classified people as white persons. And essentially, let me go on to here. It says that, let's go on to what the exclusions are. So the term excludes a Hindu, a Mongolian, and again, these terms are kind of antiquated because, you know, this is a much older codification of law. But a Hindu, a Mongolian, a native-born Filipino, a native of Afghanistan, an Arab, it has even been held to include a Syrian and an Armenian. Interesting. It says, in the legislation of the slave period, persons without admixture of color, blood, whatever the actual complexion might be. So in other words, they're telling you that is considered a white person under this March 26, 1790 Naturalization Act. And as we know, you had to be classified as a free white person in particular in order to, you know, vote, hold land, things of that nature. And I just want to touch on it right quick, and I'll leave the floor for you gentlemen. But they later come out with another Naturalization Act in July 14th of 1870, where they amended the original. And it basically says, meaning all persons belonging to European races then commonly counted as white, and their descendants, including such descendants in other countries to which they have emigrated. It includes all European Jews, more or less intermixed with peoples of Celtic, Scandinavian, Teutonic, Iberian, Latin, Greek, and Slavic descent. It includes Magyars, includes the mixed Latin, Celtic, Iberian, and Moorish inhabitants of Spain and Portugal, the mixed Greek, Latin, Phoenician, and North African inhabitants of Sicily, and includes the Latin, Phoenician, and North African inhabitants of Sicily, and the mixed Slav and Tartar inhabitants of South Russia. But it does not mean Caucasian race, Aryan race, or Indo-European races, nor the mixed Indo-European, Dravidian, Semitic, and Mongolian peoples who inhabit Persia. So there's a lot there. It also says Assyrian or Asiatic birth and descent will not be entitled to become a naturalized citizen of the United States as being a free white person. So, you know, we go into what, you know, Lily Fuller goes into, how words are weapons. And, this is it. I mean, it's very confusing. I mean, it, you know, it's constantly changing, and you went from, you had two three, I guess, originally. I guess you started out with two, black and white. Then you went to black, white, mulatto. Mulatto then changed to, Negro or colored. Then you went to I think black for a time, then you went to Afro-American, you went to African-American, And it seemed like we kind of stuck between black and African American again or something like that. So it's constantly changing and playing with words. But anyway, I'll leave the floor to you, gentlemen. Thank you for it.
So let me ask you this then. You know, even with all of that being said, how do you feel about the classification of black? Do you think that it needs to be vetted out, or do you see it as a term that should be used as something to identify a group of people that share a common history? Because clearly we don't all look the same, and we all don't share the same skin tone. None of us on this line probably look exactly the same or share the exact same phenotype, of course, but do you think that it is a term that should still be used, or do you see it as something that needs to be eliminated, and that there needs to be something that's a little bit more more accurate as far as defining those that are classified as black, especially that's on this landmass?
No, that's an excellent question. I think that's a twofold answer to that. I think in terms of changing that classification, because I mean, at this point, it's become an identity for people who pretty much fall within that or who have accepted that, whether that's been acceptance that's been forced upon them, or it's acceptance that's say, hell with it, you know, I am black, you know. I think because of that force, it's become an identity, and so it'll be hard for people to give that up and reclass themselves. I think that's an interesting question, though. I think that's something that perhaps it should be discussed, and I think in a lot of circles it actually is being discussed, but whether that's actually worth time and effort. Because you're working with people's mindsets and sensibilities. If you can change that, I mean, that's very difficult. But the second part of that, I think, in terms of how it's used, it's a placeholder for those who wield the power to control the language. So it's a placeholder in order for them to maneuver in and out of certain verbiage. So it's a useful tool in terms of mental manipulation, and it's a label ultimately. You know, if I'm somebody who labels things, whether that's with like a brand, physical brand, you know, be it a corporation, or if I own cows and I brand them with my initials so that my neighbors know that if, you know, those cows roam astray, he can look at it and say, well, that's, you know, that such and such is cow, so I can return it to him, whatever the case may be. So that is a form of control and manipulation, ultimately. So again, that's a two-part answer, I think.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for that information. That was much needed to add to the conversation. Definitely. Paradox, do you have anything that you want to add on to that, or you want to move on?
Yeah, I mean, I'll move on. I will say for all my Moorish brothers out there, I do know that I think Uncle Taj Bay was saying that that blacks don't want to be a crayon in a crayon box, you know, as far as your status is concerned. Just wanted to say that. But
hey, before y'all move on, can I ask one question on this topic?
Yes, sir.
Would changing classification, well, two questions. Has whatever people has classified themselves as or self-determined or how they refer to themselves stop racist whites, Europeans from practicing racism against them? And number two, if we come up with a new classification for ourselves, and it's a very complex topic and deep topic, thank you for coming up with it, but if we change our classification, is that going to change the system of racism? Is it going to end it? That's my question.
Do the white supremacists do the classifying? and they are in charge. It will not end the system of racism. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that once they took our agency away, as far as being able to identify ourselves and being able to gather with like minds to share a combined culture and to go your own way, once they eliminated that, the ability to do that, and you know, once they initiated sexual contact with the African woman that came over on the shores, and then the native woman that was already here and had children with those women, they had to put them in a certain category, and they included them in the category of the people that they brought over and the people that was already here that had a certain phenotype and look to them. So,
matter of fact, that's why the word white and non-white is so important. I think.
Yeah.
I think the non-white, in my opinion, is less important. The focus obviously is going to be on white people. But the reason why I'm I think the word black is perfect to identify. The question that I'm asking, and this is just for everybody on the call, is to try to figure out what does it really mean to be black, and is there any rules around that process? That's what I'm trying to get to. And that leads right into my next statement for everybody is, I'm going to give you an example about rules. And then I just want to see if it applied to our group, because I think, and I could be wrong about this, but getting a better understanding of your own group of people, what does it mean to be a part of this group, I want to say that it might help some type of unification, possibly.
Let's get that on the other side. Okay. We've got a break coming up. So this is the Code Breakers, so we will be back after these this quick break. Thank you.
It really isn't, because see, people are thinking in terms of, well, they want to brag about being black, which means that they are implying that there's something incorrect about being white, even though these are the creations of the Creator. See, and then so everybody gets into this black pride thing or white pride thing, and people immediately start taking sides. It's not about taking sides based on black and white. It's about taking sides based on justice and non-justice. Well, that's what you're really aiming for. Being black doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice. And being white doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice. Except you believe in non-justice. And that doesn't make any difference what shade you are, or how tall you are, or who your cousin was, or anything like that. Or what so-called nationality you have, like a lot of people say that they take pride in being an Englishman, or take pride in being a Frenchman, or take pride in being Afrocentric. Well, you're not supposed to be proud of any of those things if you don't believe in justice, because these words mean nothing. No nationality means anything. And waving a flag if you don't believe in not mistreating people. You've got to believe in not mistreating people, and you got to believe in helping people that need help the most. Otherwise, you don't even have any business breathing.
You are listening to Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio Network, new black media for the new millennium.
All right, we're back to Code Breakers. We are back. I do appreciate that, Mr. Reed, bringing on Mr. Neely Fuller. Go to his website, producejustice.com, and definitely get his material, please. I don't need to say nothing else. He said it all. Go to break. I don't even want to ask no more questions. We can move on to the next topic. I'm not even saying nothing else.
Well, they
produce
mean,
justice.
Produce justice. Absolutely. I'm good. It like we always reiterate here
next
at the
topic.
Co-workers, we always trying to make sure that we're kind of giving a different point of view, something that you may have not been paying attention to and maybe taken for granted. So, you know, if you're curious about, you know, what it says on your birth certificate, take a look at it. Even check and see what it says on your license. And then, you know, if you want to go to ask questions, why does it say this on my license? I mean, you can kind of do some research in your own on your own time and kind of get an idea of what these classifications mean and why this, you know, held up to be able to kind of identify people and what's the use for that. So I just thought it was very, very interesting to kind of go into the whole classification, and I just thought it was, you know, was good that we can kind of discuss it and kind of vet that out a little bit. Do you have anything, T, final thoughts before we move on to the next topic?
Well, I just want to say quickly, you know, I think that if indeed, you know, there was a discussion around a way to rebrand or reclassify people currently classified as black in the system, racism, white supremacy, I think if it was successful, it would be a great thing, because I think that one of the best ways to fight the system is to have an ideology. And if your ideology is based upon what you've been fed and taught, as far as the brand that they apply to you, then mentally it will affect what you do and how you execute things in your life and how you interact with those who look like you and don't look like you. So that's interesting. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we can definitely come back to the classification discussion. It is an important one. I think it's very important. I wanted to bring up, we can touch on the African American Museum really, really quickly, but I really want to get to the documentary, The 13th and the Birth of a Nation. I think that's probably going to kill the rest of our time. But has anyone been to the museum?
I think you're the only one that was blessed enough to get those extremely, extremely hard tickets to get part of the bourgeoisie. All right, part of the boule, friends of Roland Martin and all them, you know what I mean?
Wow.
I got you. Yeah.
No name calling. My bad.
I'm sorry. I just kind of lost track there.
Victims.
Yeah. All that good stuff. Yeah, but no. Nobody's been there. I've been outside. I try to sneak in, but they called me right before I can go in. So, you know, the security was really, really tight. You know.
I mean, I spent about 5 hours there, and went to every level. And also went to the event for the opening as well, which was I don't have a ton to say about it. If y'all have any questions, y'all can actually ask me about it. But I do have some critique, you know, kind of looking at it from more of a just a from a personal perspective. It did have it was profound in a lot of ways. I think the more you get an understanding of our history, I think the more you get clarity on how white people manipulate words and language and how they move people around this country, how they manage the planet, how they dictate knowledge, and how, you know, in my opinion, most of our knowledge that we have access to, much of it, I won't say most, but much of it has white hands on it. So I could be wrong, but I think it is somewhat of a challenge to get to. We have obviously tons of great black historians and archaeologists and writers, and anthropology people, but a lot of information does have European hands all over it. So it is a challenge to not have stuff that's been whitewashed. But outside of saying that, I thought it was for what it was, you know, looking at the people who funded it, you know, seeing all those white names all over the building was interesting.
thinking of how long it took, I think maybe 100 years or so, for this to happen, and looking at some of that and not trying to be, not trying to scrutinize it, I think, too much. I think they did a decent job based off my knowledge. I don't obviously know a ton of stuff, but I think if you're a person who's lived in places where you didn't have access to anything, and to be able to go to this location to see some stuff, and they're going to be adding obviously more and more artifacts and things to that. But I'm going to tell you, I'll say it this way: being able to see something like something very simple like basket weaving, and seeing the baskets and seeing the people who are making the baskets, that was a big deal for me. I don't even know why. I can't explain it. But that was a big deal, just to see the level of skill, or the iron work, making the iron fences and things of that nature. And all this stuff I've already obviously seen, but to see it all in one place, just from looking at the original music and the path that it took, even though I know it's been used in some negative ways, but just seeing us producing a lot of our music so far back, and seeing what they're calling remnants of a slave ship, and even seeing the continent, you know, when you first go downstairs in the basement, they also have Emmett Till's casket there. But when you go down to the basement, the first thing you see is this beautiful picture of an African queen. I'm not sure what they do list out specifically what kingdom she was from, but I just don't remember what it is off the top of my head. But they did a good job. Spent a lot. You could tell they definitely spent a ton of money, because I mean, we've been to a lot of museums, and it's up there. It's at a high end level. So they did do a good job aesthetically. Definitely next level, I think. It was a lot. It was a lot to process. A lot of information. It will push you to understand. To get out there and maybe do some studying. You see a ton of black women contributing, but they did it. They gave you a lot of that. They also gave you. They didn't give you. Well, one thing I could not find, which I got to go back, I guess next month or a couple months from now. One thing I did not find was, which is weird, which was George Washington Carver's area. I know it's there, but I didn't. I thought about it after I walked out. Like, I didn't see anything. If I saw it, I wasn't. You know, just kind of. I must have not stopped to really look at it, but I didn't see it. I don't think, but. Emmett Till's casket, that was tough. Looking at some of the images of how we migrated, coming in through the Carolinas and through Maryland, and how people got moved around, they showed a lot of that movement. They listed out a lot of the slave ships and stuff on the walls. They had a lot of that. I guess you can go back and research as well. I mean, it's a lot, man. That's all I can say. You know, they showed a lot of stuff. The Marcus Garvey Pan-Africanism, I don't even know if I saw. I think I saw something, but it wasn't a lot. It wasn't a lot. So that was definitely disappointing. Obviously, I didn't see anything, which I'm going to actually probably try to write to them or something about Dr. Wells and stuff. You know, she needs to be in there. If she wasn't, I didn't see any of her stuff in there, so I'm not sure if they asked for her stuff or not, or should it even be in there. I don't know how people feel about that, but I think it should, but it was a lot. It was, for me, it was overwhelming, just because it's a lot of information all in one place, all at one time, that you can kind of consume. I think but you can still tell that white hand, you know, it's all in there, because, you know, you're not really, you know, like we always say, things to me have to be positioned from a space where you're exposing whiteness. And I think even looking at the film, like that we're going to talk about as well, which is A Birth of a Nation, and even the 13th Amendment film, is that and y'all can tell me, I know y'all have at least seen some of that, but you know, you can tell me, but it still doesn't seem like we're identifying that white genetic survival, understanding what does it mean to be white beyond economics, you know, but people are dying and fighting to be white, not to be rich, but to maintain whiteness. And unfortunately, that's some of the things that you're just not going to be able to get, you know. And that's the only thing, and to me, which is the most important thing, obviously, is to really get an understanding of what does it mean to be white. You lose that, you know. So they did a good job to kind of show the, you know, the way we were treated and what we went through, and even from Brazil to here, even though we was able to maintain all of this wonderful culture and tyranny, under tyranny, that's the part for me that's awing to me. You know, when you're seeing Nat Turner's Bible, you know, when you're seeing the cotton bales, when you're seeing it's so much stuff though, but when you're seeing all these things, it's just a lot to take in, you know, to see what we went through this long. And they did do a good job of laying it all out, you know, historically, starting, I think they started in the 14th century, the 15th century.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of walked you through the process. And again, they could have made the helmet, you know, the most of the museum to me just on the continent, you know, and its contributions to the planet, and then came to the diaspora stuff, in my opinion. So, and of course, they didn't really do that either, but they did try to give some names and locations about where a lot of us came from, sub-Saharan Africa all the way down to Madagascar. And again, these are for the people who think or believe that they do come from that landmass. I just thought it was good stuff. It was good stuff. Just unfortunately, it's just, you know, you're not getting people to wake up and understand white supremacy, though. Not even though they show some value as far as how much we were worth to the system, as far as banks, and I think banks, and they kind of show some numbers about the values or whatever, I still don't feel like they did a good job of even showing what we produced, in my mind. Even though they had some numbers up there, they really give people a good sense of that, okay, if we was worth this much at this time, this is how much we're worth now. This is how much we've been able to contribute. It's trillions of dollars. If anyone wants to make the argument, obviously, for reparations or, you know, putting something, you know, trying to correct some things. So it does, like I said. But again, you have any questions about that or no? If not, we can jump on to the next thing.
Well, no. Did anybody else have any questions about the museum?
No, go ahead. I'm good. Yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, that's really good. I guess the only thing that I would that I would ask you is, do you think that there's any value going to the African American Museum? Do you think that it would help to alleviate confusion? We know that it's not eliminating the system, but do you think that it would help alleviate some confusion, or do you think that it would
No, I think within the system of racism, I think living in this country day to day and participating and being a part of this country, if you look at yourself like that, then it fits right into the story. You know? So from that sleepwalking perspective, I think that it's fine. I think if you're a person who studies history, you should obviously go there. I think that if you don't know anything about your people, you should definitely go there. At least you'll be able to get some information to kind of start your search or your journey. Because they, like I said, they do give you a lot of information, and it's like seven floors, 1 to 3 floors, and the basement is like 3 floors, if I'm not mistaken, or 2 or 3 floors. And so it'll give you a lot of things that if you do research, most of the stuff you already know about. You've already seen a lot of images of it, et cetera. If you love going to museums in general, then you definitely should fly here to check it out, because it definitely is. They did a really, really good job as far as the aesthetics of it. So yeah, I think that it definitely would be. I think it's a good place to go. Just understanding that, in my opinion, it's not solving no problems. But I think it is a good start to give some understanding. Because one thing we understand about this empire, it's not in the business of trying to lose. It's not in the business of trying to create clarity. And by them offering something like this, what it does is just take you deeper into the rabbit hole. Because it starts to convince you or make you believe that, oh, there are some good white folks on this planet. I mean, you know, I'm just talking, but I'm just making a point that, you know, it can definitely continue the dream state type of thing. Because, you know, where they put that at, which is in the smack, you know, the smack dead center of the mall, and it's a it's an oddly shaped building, so it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit into the area, so you're not gonna miss. It really stands out. I think the shape may have been like a crown, or it's something. From Africa, the shape that they use to design it, if I'm not mistaken. And again, like I said, you got to be concerned. When you look at the Bill Gates Foundation and this Lewinsky and these other names that's popping up on the donor list, you know, you definitely need to be concerned because, you know, and again, and then what else do we not have in there? What else are we missing from there? So we have, if you claim the continent of Africa, or what we're calling Africa, if you claim that area, the amount of history there would be 50 buildings. It's so much historical history there, and they have so many artifacts in the museums in London and other places around the world that, you know, but it does start to scratch the surface to show you how phenomenal if you believe you are an African, it does get a chance to show you how phenomenal you are. It does get to scratch on that even in slavery, even in bondage, it gives you a sense of the power that you have, regardless of the oppression that you're under. It's going to give you a sense of strength because regardless of assimilation, you know, white people are like the Borg in Star Trek or something. They come in and they eat cultures for a living. This group of people comes in and eats cultures across the planet. They consume cultures. And so to be able to still piece together in the diaspora, to still be able to piece together and hold on to some of your ancient culture, even if it's mixed into Christianity, you still have it. Even if it's mixed in Catholicism, even if the way we speak now, especially Southern people, you're still in that. Even in that sound, you listen to linguistics, you can still hear or understand linguistics. They claim you can still hear some of our language. That's why some words we pronounce a certain way. And so we know that genetically, we know that from a spiritual perspective, that we're still carrying on a lot of things from our ancestors. And again, that's why you had so many uprisings. And you know, we wasn't docile people. You know, we fought up until this day. We have not stopped fighting, but I'll leave it there. The other thing I wanted to touch on, I think you saw the 13th. Did you get a chance to see that, T? On Netflix, I believe.
No, I haven't yet to see it.
D, I know you said you did get a chance to watch it. Do you want to just cue that up?
Yeah, 13th is a new documentary directed in. It's a documentary about the 13th Amendment and how basically slavery hasn't ended. It just basically been moved from what we now call the chattel slavery plantation to the prison system. Mr. Reed, are you still online? I know this is right in your wheelhouse.
Yes, I'm here.
Did you, I know you've seen already. You've
yeah,
seen
we
13th,
actually did
correct?
A new, you know, we do New Abolitionist Radio on the network every Wednesday. So we did a special broadcast that night, when it came out on October the 7th on that Friday. So, you know, I watched it, and Max put it like this: it's better than anything out there in the mainstream, because like Brother Paradox just got through explaining, the white hands that's even on that African American museum in Washington D.C. you can see that in this film. And we still thought it was worth watching. just by them even putting the text of the 13th Amendment may be enough for some people to come to the realization that slavery was not abolished socially, technically, legally, when you have a loophole. I mean, everybody should understand what loopholes are and how important words are in contracts. And if you read, they say, read the fine print. Well, read, you know, a lot of people don't read the 13th Amendment because they don't expose it to you as a child in school. And so I was like, in my, in, 4 years ago when I first read the 13th, and I knew instantly just from reading it, on a from a legal standpoint, slavery has not been abolished. And people try to say, I call it pre-1865 slavery and post-1865 slavery. And chattel slavery is no different than prison slavery today. Chattel just simply means property. The private prisons are set up as real estate corporations to get tax loopholes and things of that nature. And so real estate is associated with chattel. Again, property. You are either property of the state, property of the federal government for those on the federal, in the federal prison. So, and now you can also be in private hands. So it does in that regard. And a couple of people did mention slavery. There was a couple of activists, and of course, from a counter racist perspective, it would make sense that the white dude on there would be less confused than everybody else, because he called it slavery, and he talks about it. So he came off as being less confused about what, and that's logically, that makes sense to me now. I'm just coming to having that thought about him and what have you. But in terms of introducing somebody to the ideal that this is slavery, it does that. It accomplished that job. But the activists, the people that were interviewed, and maybe she let them speak freely, and I don't know the process, and but some of them still seem to be confused because they were talking about criminal justice reform and not abolishing slavery. They were calling it mass incarceration instead of calling it slavery. And see, you can't reform slavery. I mean, you have to abolish it. So that's what I'll share on that. And so, but like he said about the African American Museum, it is worth the hour and a half to spend your time. You'll get some information, but you can also see a lot of confusion in the victims.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it. T, did you have anything to go ahead?
I was just going to say that, and I think based off of the thing on that particular film, that there's more blacks in prison now than it was in 1850 in slavery, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's an affirmative, sir.
In 1850, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that, I think a lot of that. Did they touch on convict leasing in that documentary?
Very short.
They did truth in sentencing, which is, I think that's 85% of your time. They did three strikes, the crime bill. They talked about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Committee, and they talked about mandatory sentencing as well.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, because my understanding was that convict leasing was an outgrowth of the prison industrial complex.
Because you're talking about working for private companies, right? Like taking calls, sewing clothes, and making things and that stuff.
Yeah, like the chain gang,
people making license plates and stuff like that.
He's talking about immediately following the Civil War. He's talking about 10 years on the timeline. He's talking about 10 years after the conclusion of the Civil War and the passage of the 13th Amendment, and then that's when they invented, the federal government started it and invented the convict leasing program, which then introduced private prisons. Now you can practice slavery through private prisons, using them as labor, slave labor, as well as investing in it and profiting like the banks did pre-1865. Ain't nothing really changed when you break it down. But that's what you're talking about, I think, is taking it back historically to convict leasing, which was 10 years after the passage of the 13th.
Yeah, I even heard that, I don't know, if this might not have been a documentary, and again, I have yet to see it, so, but I understand that Lincoln actually put bonds on the heads of all the slaves who had been freed to help pay the national debt at the time. So, I don't know, but
yeah, I think the film it put a lot of stuff together, a lot of information that you can definitely start to get deeper into.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's definitely worth seeing. I think that it kind of goes deep into the discussion about at least the language, at least to show some of the people the language of what the 13th Amendment actually says, so there's no ambiguity about it, there's no confusion. This is what the document is, and that, you know, you could take it for what it is, but this is what the document says, this right here.
And I think what's important as well is how it's done.
Right.
when we're trying to get an understanding of the system of racism, it really comes down to the how. Because, you know, at one time when you were dealing with slavery, you know, it appeared to be very direct, and then it got refined. And so them trying to figure out ways to maneuver language and words, and now you're called a citizen, and now you're called free, and now, you know, you're being told a lot of things, and you're being treated. You know, it seems like they show you how you used to be treated to make you appreciate how you're treated now, or they show you places in other places that they've destroyed, even though they act like they didn't do it, but they show you other places that they've destroyed, and then they say, well, you could be here. So when you reflect, or when you mirror those places in your mind, I think sometimes it makes you think that you are in a better or safer place. As well as victims, especially older victims, when I was growing up, you know, these are not conscious people, these are just regular, hardworking folks, you know, trying to survive. But, you know, I was told, you know, what makes this film interesting, because it reminded me of some things with the Clintons and Trump in the 80s and 90s, and how, you know, listening, I know that they're talking about me now. It's what kind of shook me a little bit, is just because every time I see Hillary Clinton speak, or every time I see Bill Clinton speak, as I was being washed into whiteness as a teenager, etc., you know, I'm not, my energy is not being, or never was being directed in the correct place. You know, you're almost told, don't make excuses, you know, pay attention, act right, follow the rules, etc., but no one is contextualizing the environment for you. The assumption is that things are working correctly, and if you act this way, you'll benefit from it. But the complexities of a human being, or the complexities of a culture, it's not that, it doesn't work that way. It's ignorant, it's naive, and it's unfortunate. And that's why, again, we use the word victim clearly, even though I like to challenge that word, but you can see the level of ignorance. Because, you know, my family coming out of slavery, they sharecropped, they went to factories, etc. I'm not going to get too into details of it, but it was a very simple process, right? Slavery, sharecropping, factories, right? In the Deep South, not that, you know, it's pretty straightforward. And, you know, every family talked something differently, or talked things that were similar. But, you know, you definitely were told that, you know, don't act like them over there. You don't want to be a part of that group. You don't want to, now this is in environments where whites aren't yet around. They're there, but they're not right on that block. And when you're being told that, when you're, you know, I think as a child, maybe, you might assume, the way you're raised anyway, I would say, you may assume that everything is okay. You know, you're thinking that you are a whole person, And as you identify, as you're seeing yourself, you recognize, you start to tell yourself, I'm a good person, am I a bad person, am I acting right, do I make my parents happy, etc. And so, you know, growing up and being told what's good and what's bad, and, you know, not getting an understanding of the overall system, very, very problematic. And when you tie in Christianity to that, black Christianity into that, it intensifies the confusion. Because no one is ever explaining to you, like I always tell people, just like prison, poverty is produced. It's a byproduct, or it's a product of capitalism or the system of racism. This system produces poverty. This system produces violence. And so, you know, it's almost like it's a perfect setup. You know, it's really a perfect setup for us. And unfortunately, it put me in a place to judge people, right? The family's judging people. You know, those people don't know how to act. You know, they're always in the streets. And, you know, their families ain't worth nothing. You know, they didn't come from... You get all type of crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. And these are coming from people who you would think... people who you would think, when you reflect back on it, wouldn't be saying those type of things. But in turn, would be giving you clarity on it. Not that the devil got them, not that they're under some spell, but that they're in a system of racism and white supremacy. And they're responding to this environment. And it's not for you to judge them, and it's not for you to punish them. You know, it's not for you to think that someone should be locked away or that someone should be killed or whatever. It should be, you know, by the state. You know, it should be trying to get knowledge and understand that there are laws being put in place. People are following these rules, and that they have at the state, local, and county levels to develop things to put you in those positions. You know, when you have scientists and you have these people who know that a certain percentage of your group is going to go, is not going to finish school, they're not going to get a job, not going to be able to participate in the environment. They already have this stuff planned out. And so it's hard for me because it's on purpose. You know, it's not like, you know, people are failing and they're getting on drugs or whatever is happening to their life, committing suicide or whatever. It's not that it's happening from a natural perspective, but the system itself is producing that. And then I have the nerve to try to judge the person, the black person, right? But anyway, I don't want to talk too long. I know we don't have much time, so I'll let you just get in there before I keep ranting.
No, that's pretty good. I think that you know, me, when I watched the 13th, you know, I just wanted to just kind of get a little bit of an idea about the history and make sure that you know, the way she did the movie, I noticed she's still part of the Hollywood establishment and, victim. She's a victim of racism, white supremacy. But, you know, that still doesn't mean that we can't, you know, list our grievances with the film and still be respectful that she actually still created that actual piece of work to where it can at least be out there that the way she did it. If I was to give a suggestion, I think that it would have been put in a certain way where, you know, even though this continues today, this is something that basically white people wanted to create, and I don't think that was really clear. It seemed like it, you know, like the government almost seemed like some kind of separate entity from the people that we're dealing with every day. And then you'll hear things like, oh, well, we need to go ahead and you know, be a part of the political process. We need to reform the system instead of just eliminating the system altogether and trying to come up with a better system that is going to produce something that's close to justice. I don't think that the human beings currently constructed on this planet are able to produce justice as Mr. Fuller has described it or laid out, but something that is close to justice. And the thing that will have to happen to do that is that all white people would need to cease to have their power in their hands, because all their power was taken by force and violence. And, you know, for that to be the understanding is to see something like that piece of work that she did, which is the 13th Amendment, and to come to that conclusion is to get people to act, like Mr. Reed said. But I think what it is just, it's almost like they want to create a piece of work that is supposed to separate us from our own history, so to speak. Like, these people we are not related to. Like, creating A Birth of a Nation was that long ago. This will be basically our great-grandfather's or great-grandmother's age. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I think that, yeah, there's clearly some language that was used to kind of curtail the message. But I think overall, based on, you know, how things are today, I think that it would help to alleviate a little bit of confusion and to cause people to study, which is a good thing. I think that if it gets any victims to kind of get into a space where they can start to look up information about the 13th Amendment and then go deeper into the history of this country and see the mistreatment that took place, especially when it comes down to black bodies, native and indigenous bodies on this landmass, and to get the real history about who created it, because it's not hidden. None of this history is hidden. It's all in front of your face. If you come to Washington, D.C., they have these murals up, and all these murals that are up in these landmarks are all about racism, white supremacy. If you go downtown, just stop and look at one of those murals, I guarantee it will be about racism. It will be about segregation. It will be about the marches. It will be about something to do with the history of this city. And it will be very much closely tied to racism, white supremacy, which has always been the contrast here. So when you have really, you know, the museum is a site. Knowing that it's part of the Smithsonian, and it's the newest museum that they have created, just like Paradox has already stated, you can't miss it. When you come to the city, you're going to see the gold building. And I think at night they kind of like have like where they can create designs in it, right? Like they got lights, right, where they can light it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yep, they got that kind of thing going on. It is a immaculate building. I have seen it up and
I
close.
I have a question for
personal.
Paradox.
Yep, go ahead.
Paradox, you went to the museum and earlier you asked about, you know, if we had any questions, and this is tied to the topics of the 13th. And so, do you think the victims described in the 13th are owed reparations? Because, you know, like earlier we were talking about classifications and who's owed, uh-huh, reparations, and so to answer that question, I feel like all people are Afro, however they classify themselves, but the system, uh-huh, classified them as black, and they have, even if they weren't enslaved, they terrorized them and uh-huh, and treated, they didn't have full benefits of citizenship. So we all know that history, the people on this, uh-huh, line. And so, but the people in the 13th, that period of mistreatment, do you think that they're owed reparations similarly? And did they cover that in the museum, any of the, I know they used the politically correct term mass incarceration, but after slavery, did they show the convict leasing? And like the a question was asked earlier, you know, about convict leasing, was that in the museum?
That, you know, that is a good question too. I did not see, I don't think I saw anything on prison. I don't think I've seen anything about prison. Did they show some chain gang stuff in the 18? They had a lot of videos and a lot of things on film, and they may have showed some stuff early on. So they may have told a story about it, but to be straight with you, I don't remember. I don't remember anything in there was nothing big about it, I'll put it that way, because they do run a lot of little films and stuff all over the place, so they may have touched on it, but I can't remember it being anything significant. As far as reparations for people post-1865, absolutely, we should be getting reparations, and after 1865 for sure. And that includes the continent of Africa and other places in the diaspora as well. The Europeans and the Americans should, and Canadians and Australians as well, should be cutting some pretty fat checks, or in all other forms of payment as well, from debt forgiving and everything else. But looking at the and they also should be convicting families that we have images of during the Jim Crow era, as far as all the lynching mobs. They have all the, they have these people's faces and their names, and I'm not totally clear about why they're not being convicted. Well, I am clear about it, but those folks should be getting convicted, and their families should be getting exposed as well. I'm not sure if it's, I'm sure some of it's out there somewhere, but that's just a thought that I had. As well as I'm seeing all these white folks, I'm like, this is not that long ago. So they're either alive or their kids and grandkids are alive. I'm not totally clear about that's not being dealt with as well. So just to put that out there on the record. As far as the Birth of a Nation, I know we're down to the wire a little bit. As far as, did you have any comments on that, DC or T?
T, did you see the movie? Did you see the movie at all yet?
Well, due to the weather situations going on, I wouldn't be able to make it out.
Yeah. I was fighting the storms and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, but no, you. But just quickly, you made a great point about the people getting convicted or indicted for the lynchings and whatnot. That's interesting. But anyway, go ahead with your thoughts on the movie.
Another thing, I think they was trying to, I think we may have missed it, but they was trying to get the president to remove the charges for Marcus Garvey off his record, if I'm not mistaken. They had a petition out a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I also want to mention a few weeks ago as well is the prison strike as well. That's kind of, I know that this is the reason that has been discussing it on their program for quite a while, but they're still not talking about it in the mainstream as far as the prison strikes that's been going on in this nation. So we can maybe touch back on that too in a second. But Birth of a Nation, go ahead, D. I'll let you. I've been doing a lot of talking. I'll let you discuss that real quick. I would just say that I have a lot more critiques about that than I do to the 13th for sure. So I have some problems with it. You know, I'm not a historian, obviously, but I'm not. It was a bit strange, to be honest with you. Watching, I saw a lot more black death than I saw white death, and I just leave it there. So I'll let you go ahead.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the movie seems to be edited down. It's a powerful film. Definitely, I suggest that victims of racism or people that classify under the classification of black should watch the film. I think that is very, very informative. At least, like I said, to get to know who Nat Turner is and get a little bit of the history of some of the revolt that took place not too far from here, by the way, in VA, which is you know, the cradle of the Old South, of VA, Maryland, DMV area. But yeah, I think that it's very important to get some information about who Nat Turner was, and just for the point of that, I think this worth seeing. But yeah, it was sort of more watered down than I actually thought it was. But the imagery was very, very powerful. Nat Turner coming to the conclusion that he made that all white people needed to be dealt with in a certain way, almost like at the end of the day, if there was going to be any kind of resolution, the only resolution we're gonna be able to come to is to fight. And I think that is not very clearly mapped out in the film, and I think that's done on purpose. I think they try to make it seem like a response to racism instead of something that was strategically thought about, which I think that
you're not indicting the system that's been set up here globally during that time frame.
Absolutely.
And they also, like you said, editing it down ain't even the right word for what I mean. This is a large group of people that went through many, many different plantations, and they show like two or three plantations, and it was more like revenge killings. It really wasn't giving you a clear understanding of how this thing really was running. Mm-hmm. And which, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I know he's on a limited budget, et cetera. And when he started talking about white folks cheering at the Sundance, he was already... It's already question mark.
That just make you go
right there. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So we know what this is about. We know this, like I've been telling people that I've been coming in contact with. The only thing I remember about the film is a lot of black folks being hung. I don't too much remember white folks being killed in the film. So I'm still confused. My point is that it was minimized when you understand. I'm not telling you nothing. But, you know, for me, when I watch television, when I watch media, when you're framing and you're sitting on images and you're moving that camera back slowly, and I'm just seeing one black person after another with ropes around their neck, and I'm seeing that 20 and 30 different people in my mind, it seemed like it was 1,000. They were showing it so much, the way it was hitting me anyway, is that the few whites that were killed, I'm looking like, well, what am I really watching here? So it's definitely, it is what it is, you know, welcome to racism, so. And I don't know if anyone, I know Mr. Reed, if he wants to touch I know we're a little bit short on time, but the prison strikes. You know, I'm just starting to look more into it a little bit more, but I know it's been going on for some months all across the country, dozens of prisons.
It's only been about a month entering into the fourth.
Only been about a month?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. The best way to get information is just use social media hashtag prison strike or prison strikes. So use that on Twitter or Facebook for those that's on Facebook. And just use that social media hashtag and you'll see stuff even from us, you know. So, yeah, that's how you can get most informed about it. But these brothers is talking about the 13th. And and they said that they're slaves. And, I'm documenting it. This is history. A lot of that I could say might have been born on this network. Because some of the leaders in the prison movement inside the walls was calling in to New Abolitionist Radio, and they were listening to New Abolitionist Radio and us document and go and put it in the context of slavery. And a few of them would call in on the, you know, smuggled cell phones and whatnot. And then that will be the brothers that's associated with the Free Alabama movement. I'm not going to put any names out there to help the feds. But it's out there if you look up the history who those people are. But then we started hearing that language being used, and then obviously there is some kind of, these brothers are networking from prison to prison. They got some kind of communication system going on to pull off this strike on the anniversary of
the Attica.
Thank you. At the Attica prison slavery rebellion. You know, they'll call it the Attica prison riot. Again, words are important. I learned that from, you know, being introduced to counter-racist ideology and their terms and phrases. So, and words are important. So I call it the Attica prison slavery rebellion. Because I understand what was really going on. So this is what this movement is about. And it ain't about everybody in there didn't commit a crime. That's not the point. The point, some people have taken a life and committed crimes against other people, but the majority of people are in there for victimless, nonviolent crimes, which you can pick up on in the 13th. They talk a lot uh-huh. about that and how these corporations pass laws and work with politicians. So, you know, you do get the process of how modern slavery works through legislation, through, you know, people activity area 6 and uh-huh. 5 working together, you know, uh-huh. and to bring about, number one, economics for the slaver class. So uh-huh. that's what so if they going to be working for like AT&T, you just had their president, Mr. Stephen Randall, talk about uh-huh. Black Lives Matter. You know, those three words came out his mouth and saying people don't want to have uncomfortable conversations about race, but we need to have them. And so I put out a little short 2-minute video using his own words, and then pointing out that AT&T has been using prison slave labor uh-huh. since 1993. So let's have that uncomfortable conversation.
That's crazy.
And so, you know, these brothers and sisters are being paid sometimes anywhere from 15 cents an hour to maybe $2 an hour. Like they were paying people to do call center work. This is call center work I have done and know people that was making as much as $60,000 a year doing customer service. I think y'all mentioned that earlier, uh-huh. you know. Uh-huh. And so you got people in prison who's doing this kind of work, but then when they get out, do you think AT&T is giving them jobs with that felony status? No. So that's what they rebelling against. Some of them shouldn't be there, and then the ones, until we come up with a better system than putting people in cages, then if you're going to work them, pay them quote unquote fair wage, which you will pay white people on the outside,
and we know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, you don't get an argument from me. Prisons need to be, all of them need to be shut down,
That's just basically expose the system for what it is, mistreatment at the highest level, and you know, that just needs to cease at all time. Either prison is used to rehabilitate and to get people back into society, or it's not. And if you're going to just use it as a way of just getting free labor, then that needs to be exposed on the highest end.
Well, like I told you a while back, it needs to just be no such thing.
That's what I'm saying.
It needs to go completely.
It needs to be eliminated. I agree. Yeah. Not reformed.
Yeah, because like I said before, that these behaviors are being produced. People aren't, even especially us, we're not born this way from my understanding. I could be wrong about that, but something is happening to us. These things, I don't think these things are necessary and shouldn't be in existence. There's something going on that's causing this. So it's not a birth, not like some kind of birth defect. You know, human beings aren't meant to be put in anything. So there's clearly a problem with the system, not the people. But I leave that there. What kind of time we got?
I think that's it. I think we're wrapping up now. So
yeah, if y'all want to go into your final comments, you have about 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Okay. But, you know, however long y'all take.
Do you have anything that you wanted to kind of give as a wrap up of anything that we actually discussed today?
No, I just want to say, just end off real quick. I think that in my quick comment is that I think they can come out with a movie like the 13th, and they'll probably come out with a lot more similar to that, because they're going to start rolling out these machines that are already replacing human labor. Mm-hmm. And, so that way they can come out with these films and eventually do away with that type of prison industrial complex, because they'll have machines doing the work and they'll find somewhere else to put these folks, you know, which can include me.
Maybe they'll start testing them and then just do mass exterminations. Maybe that's the next step. Who knows? I mean,
right.
there's no end to what they can and cannot do.
Yep. So
that's why justice is so important. And again, you can always download our podcast. I think on our iTunes, we're on YouTube, which is pretty good. as well as you can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. Many other shows out there. Obviously, always a shout out to Dusty Renegade and the Cows. You can also find us on Twitter at Codebreakers191, Facebook at Codebreakers1999, Instagram Code_Breakers1865. Just to give it out one more time. So, you have any final thoughts before we close out?
Yeah, please check out Abolitionist Radio. Is it Abolitionist Radio? Is that the name of the program?
New Abolitionist Radio.
New Abolitionist Radio. When did the program actually come on, Mr. Reed?
Every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern.
Absolutely. Very, very informative program that goes into a deeper discussion about the new slavery system that is here. Not new, but when it went way in 1865, what it actually transferred to. But no, that's my thoughts. You know,
I want to add on as far as making sure you go to, when you go to YouTube, if you go to Black Talk Radio on YouTube, definitely select the little, I think it's like a little bell that's on there, and it actually pops up the programs when they're streaming live. It lets you sends you alerts to let you know pretty much real time that he's streaming a show. So it definitely is very convenient as well.
And our program is on every second Tuesday of each month,
first,
nine
first
till
and third.
First and third. Oh, first and the third. Jeez, yeah. First and the third.
From Tuesday, 9 to 11.
9 to 11.
And this is the Code Breakers.
I'm D.
I'm Paradox.
Until next time. Peace.